The number of people looking to buy firearms is up nearly 50% compared to 2007, according to the FBI.
In the month of November, our gun sales were probably comfortably 250% of what an average month is.
All in favor of losing your rights? Please do nothing.
I gotta give me back. I can't be beat, and that's a fact. It's okay, I'll find a way. It ain't gonna take me down no way.
Yeah. This rally is not about guns. But what these guns that everybody's going to wear represent is the true badge of the free man. That he can bear arms in defense of himself without permission from anyone. And that's what these arms represent.
Gun laws in the U.S. vary by state, and the amount of regulation is a hot-button political issue.
It can't take me.
You have associated two U.S. senators and associating them or comparing them to terrorists. I said, well, they are.
Okay. Can't take me.
Fill your hand, you son of a bitch!
You can't take me. I'm free. Oh, yeah.
Been awakened by the crowing of a rooster while the night's dew is still heavy on the ground and the voice of Uncle Ben seems to break the morning silence, bringing lights to windows all around. Well, it's time to rise and shine and start another hardcore day. Get the cows in and start the milking chores. It's nice to think about it, maybe even visit, but I wonder could I live there anymore. Something about the smell of cornbread cooking on a wood stove seems to bring a picture to my mind of a little three-room house with Mama in the kitchen. But she can't stop to talk, ain't got the time. She's a-fixin' Daddy's supper. He's a-workin' overtime, trying to pay our bill at the grocery store. It's nice to think about it, maybe even visit, but I wonder could I live there anymore. As I think about my childhood and of my old hometown, I don't really miss them like before. It's nice to think about it, maybe even visit, but I wonder could I live there anymore.
And it's time for the shooting bench. If political incorrectness offends you, or if you don't like guns, or if you don't believe our government is corrupt enough to compare to 1938 Nazi Germany, this may not be the show for you, because for the next 2 hours, that's all we're going to talk about. You need to understand that there's a storm coming. You need to understand that the storm is building strength. And most of all, you need to understand that
we are the storm.
Yeah.
And welcome to the Shooting Bench, the 12th of August, and it's a Monday. Hope everybody had a good weekend. We had a kind of a rainy weekend here, but it was good. We still know. I just found out this morning that we are at 26% of what our normal precipitation should be this time of year. Flagstaff is at, I think it said 53% or something like that. So we're just at 50% or less across the state. As much rain, as much snow as we had and everything, we just haven't had the rains this year that we should have. Let me rephrase that. We're at 26% of the rain we should have had for the last 2 months, from June 1st to August 11th, I think it said, or something like that. So however long that is, that's what we have 26% of the amount we should have had in that length of time. Oddly enough, there's been a few little fires. I think the biggest one around was like 2,200 acres. So, strangely enough, they've been able to keep track of all that, and the fires haven't been bad at all. So that's good. And Tebow says, I was here.
Oh.
He just wasn't in the chat room, I guess.
Oh.
Let me go see. It's 5x5. Thank you, Tebow. Yakima Glock. I was going to check and see if we're making any noise out there. I told you we've gotten quite a bit of response from the podcast people, who are the biggest bunch of listeners we have, and unanimously, all the ones that have answered, they would like to move. What would it be, back another hour, and start the Shooting Bench at 8 instead of 9. Which means we're going to have to figure out. I need to get with Detinker and see what spots are available, and see if Amy, see what if there's still a spot open at 7 for Amy. So I don't know about all that. Haven't got a hold of Detinker yet, but we'll get that ironed out, and hopefully this week we'll have a definite answer for you on what's going to happen. So I'm inclined to stick with 3 days, with Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, and keeping Liberty Lounge on Fridays. So what we do, I say Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I'm good with keeping 3 days. I just got to find out what is available there. So I said I was going to do that last week, and I didn't. So or this weekend. Whatever. We had a busy weekend, though. I had a lot of stuff going on. I was building steps and painting stuff, and Amy's pulling weeds and doing gardeny things, and before we knew it, the weekend was just pretty much shot. So it didn't get done nearly as much as what we'd hoped, but it's one of those things. It's just life, I guess. We have a lot of things to talk about tonight, but one of the things I want to get into first is I've just been invited to be an admin to a new Facebook group. Matter of fact, Tebow's in that group. He's the one that invited me over. And one of the things that came up today is open carry versus concealed carry. Now, that in itself is not too exciting, because that happens almost every day. Something like that happens. So, but a guy from that evidently keeps close track of me. It's funny, because he didn't know who I was. He didn't know that I was the same two people. I sent him an article that I wrote, and he said, "Let's see, let me find this here." He said, "Thank you. Your article will get a whole lot of traction in my universe. I'll start this in the morning, since I'm watching Gunsmoke right now on INSP. Expect some feedback. I kid you not, I can't get over that I'm talking with Desert Scout. Facebook may suck, but not at the moment. I've been reading your stuff since forever. Should be quite the event tomorrow. Meanwhile, thanks for reading my dribble. Have a good evening. I'll yell at you tomorrow, blah, blah, blah." So
I'm not sure what he where the what he saw me as Desert Scout, unless it's maybe here on the chat room. I don't know. But anyway, I thought that was kind of neat. But one of the deals that I set him here was I try to get confirmation, you know, verification of things that I tell people. And this was, believe it or not, now I knew this report, but to find it in U.S. News World Report is pretty significant, I think. And it's a kind of a long article, but the part that I sent him, I just sent him a screenshot of this part that was relevant here to what we were talking about. His question was, well, somebody else sent me an article. Somebody from New Mexico sent me an article that said, this is one of those times when concealed carry is better than open carry, or was it? And I said, well, maybe not. That was a one where a lot of you probably saw it, where the guy was in a convenience store and it was being robbed, and he gave him his wallet and everything else, and when the guy turned around to rob somebody else, he whipped his gun out and shot him. So good tactics, worked out well. But my point is, and what they asked me is if this guy would have been open carrying, do you think he would have been the first one shot? And I think that is the biggest fallacy in the world as far as open carry goes. I've open carried for, you know, 40 years, and I've seen countless times when people didn't even notice the gun until I, you know, it was around them for a while or, you know, something happened. But it's just most people just don't notice things like that as well as you would think that they would. So I said, well, in the first place, they probably wouldn't have noticed it. And in the second place, if they did, you know, at the onset, before everything started, they probably would have walked away. Because nobody wants to get in a gunfight robbing a convenience store. They may be prepared for that if they're robbing Fort Knox, but a couple of punks going into a 7-Eleven are really not looking for a gunfight. Will they shoot you if they feel threatened? Probably so. But if they're going in and they just happen, now this has happened, and I've told you several stories about, with articles to back it up, where, crimes have been averted simply by an open carrier being on the premise, sometimes even not even knowing what was going on, not even knowing that he saved the day by being there. And this thing on U.S. News World Report says 1985 Department of Justice. Now, I'd like to see an updated version of this. 85 was a long time ago. But even then, it said that 57% of felons polled agreed that criminals are more worried about meeting an armed victim than they are running into the police. Now, that says something. And if you've kept up with the gun thing very much, you know who Gary Kleck is. Anyway, he's found out that 92% of criminal attacks are deterred when a gun is merely shown, or in rare cases, a warning shot fired, meaning that most people don't have to be shot, or you don't have to shoot somebody to stop the crime. So, anyway, I gave him my article and said, Here's some food for thought and some ammunition for you if you get into any debates or anything. And he seemed like he was glad to get that. So, and the, most of you have read it, I think, or a lot of you have. And it's called simply Why I Open Carry. And it's long, but it's a pretty good little deal. So if you want to, if you're interested in it, just go to my blog and you can check it out. Just go to SWSAblog.com and scroll down there a little ways and you'll find Why I Open Carry, or Why I Carry Openly, I think is the name of it. But anyway, it's the only thing on there that's even close to that name, so you can figure it out. All right, let's move on. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. I figured out where I stopped last week, and man, I got a lot of stuff on here. One of them, and this is a great story. I just love stories with happy endings. You know how emotional I am about the happy ending stories. And this is one that I just loved. This was about a pedophile who abused an 11-year-old girl and was drowned in a prison toilet. Now, isn't that a great ending? Don't y'all just love endings like that? 56 years old, drowned in Duval County Jail in Jacksonville, Florida, according to the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office. Guy stuck his head in the toilet and I guess kept it there till he had inhaled most of the contents, evidently. So, anyway. Okay, now, people, I'm going to go through a bunch of these. I'm going to go kind of probably a little bit faster than I should because we've got quite a few. Some of them we want to talk about a little more than others. But this, you know, they had that guy that they caught, not the Walmart shooter, but the guy that walked into Walmart wearing a vest, a ballistic vest, and carrying an AK or an AR or something, I don't remember what it was, long gun. And, of course, he was arrested, and he's damn lucky he didn't get shot. And I've said this I don't know how many times. Well, he was just exercising his rights. Okay, I know, I get that, but it's the whole yelling fire in a crowded theater thing. Yes, it's your right to do that, but sometimes you just have to be smart enough to not do those kind of things. And after there's just been, you know, numerous shootings in Walmarts around the country and stabbings and whatnot, walking into a Walmart with an AK-47 is just to test the waters. He said, I just want to see if my Second Amendment rights would be violated. Well, if you wasn't such a retard, they wouldn't have been. That was the dumbest thing that anybody's done any time here recently. Was it his right? Did he break any laws? No, he did not. Was it his right? Yes, it was. But it's still stupid. It's stupid any time to carry a long gun into Walmart. Or into any store like that. You know, if you're going to exercise open carry, if they have open carry in your state, wear a handgun. Be conservative. Be a little bit smart about it. Carrying a semi-automatic rifle, people are scared of them anyway. This doesn't make any sense. You're pushing the envelope just a little too far. And he's damn lucky somebody didn't kill him. A fireman with a gun stopped him. And apparently the guy, you know, immediately gave up and was compliant and everything, and that's good. It kept him alive. But, you know, if that fireman would have been just a little bit nervous, you know, a little quick on the trigger, he'd have killed that kid. And I'm going to tell you the truth, I wouldn't have blamed him a bit. It may not be the right thing to say for someone supposedly exercising their rights, but you know, it's just the wrong time for it. You mean, you got to use your head a little bit. Damn. Well, you know, along those same lines here, same type of story, there was a, this was in Times Square. And a car backfired, and people went absolutely nuts, thinking there was another mass shooting fixing to happen, and an active shooter here. When the car backfired, and they got a video of it, and all these people took off running after the car backfired. You can see the ones that aren't running are looking at it. Look at that. That's from a car backfire. Yeah, in Times Square. Oh, you know, thousands and thousands and thousands of people. Yeah, exactly. That was my point. Is everyone just jumping? You know, And this kid walks into the Walmart with the AK. People are jumping. He's damn lucky to be alive, I promise. But all these thousands and thousands of people here in Times Square when that car backfired, this video shows them, I mean, just running each other over and you know, just the street is moving with people. Thousands of people. Not hundreds, thousands. Many, much, a lot. Sidewalk to sidewalk, wall to wall, and looks like, I don't know, a couple hundred yards up there or something. But anyway, so people are jumping, and this is definitely not the time to be doing that kind of stuff. It's the time to be smart. If you're going to exercise your rights, exercise them responsibly. Do it in such a way that you're not infringing on someone else's rights or not scaring somebody to death. Now, there are times, like I said, if I'm legally carrying a handgun and I'm out on the street somewhere, I don't mean walking into the Boys and Girls Club or something, but if I'm out somewhere and somebody bothers somebody, then, you know, go home if it bothers you. But that's not the same as carrying an AK into Walmart. That was just dumb. Let's see. And here's another point to make. This one was, wait a minute, let me go see what's going on in the chat room here, if anything. Nan joined us. Okay, Nan, if your Adobe player is on your laptop is blocked, is it blocked or did this not come on? You may need to reload Adobe Player. But that has happened to me. It hadn't happened for a long time, but it's happened numerous times to me. So you may just need to go back in there and reinstall Adobe Flash Player, and that might fix that up. I don't know. So where was I? I was right here. No, was I right there? No, where was I at? Well, we were talking about the... Oh, here we go. Yeah, this is it right here. We've talked about this a lot. Remember all the people that made fun of... there was a school somewhere, back east somewhere. Remember the school had... one teacher had suggested getting 5-gallon buckets of rocks and putting them in the school. This was in a place where the teachers were not allowed to be armed. They had no armed security. So what the hell else is he going to do? I think grabbing a bucket full of rocks was an ingenious idea. And everybody laughed and made fun of me and said, oh, yeah, bringing a rock to a gunfight, blah, blah, blah. You know how I feel about that. And I think it's an absolutely marvelous idea. And when you're in the absence of anything else, what are you supposed to do? You stand there and say, well, you don't, if I had a rock, I'd throw it at you, but since I don't, well, just shoot me, I reckon. Well, during this El Paso thing, there's a survivor here of the shooting, was praised for distracting the gunman by throwing bottles. I rest my case. The thing I wrote about, being safe in your church and doing things. If there's somebody trying to shoot or shooting and all of a sudden encounters a hail of briefcases and shoes and erasers and hymn books and chairs and pencils and whatever, if it ain't nailed down, throw it. He can't shoot very well. While he's not shooting very well, someone used the time to close up the gap and engage him physically. But this guy here, he's 50 years old, and he said he dismissed the praise, claiming that any man that's a man would have done what he did. There you go. That's why it wasn't a millennial or a snowflake or something doing that. He said he heard the gunshots from inside the produce department and instinctively ran towards his mother, whom he described as a gun-wielding grandma. So again, I have to ask here, where was your gun? You're in a state that allows concealed carry. You're in an establishment that allows guns, typically. Where was your gun? He said, an hour before we went to Walmart, she says, oh, we're just going to Walmart. I'm just going to put the gun in my room. So when I went to her, no gun. I was like, oh, my gosh, are you kidding me? I talked about this. There was another thing I just shared on Facebook where there was a coach at this same shooting in Walmart in El Paso. And this coach had helped a bunch of kids out the back door. Okay, great. Good for him. I'm glad he did it. I'm glad he saved the kids. Great. Then he comes out and says, well, you know, why wasn't there, of all the people that carry concealed and everything, why wasn't there a concealed carry holder? Why didn't they pull their gun out? Why didn't you? Why are you asking that question? Who are you to to badmouth these other people. Where was your gun? Now, in all fairness, maybe he's a convicted felon or something, wasn't allowed to carry one. I don't know about that. But barring that, he has no business to say anything about other people if he didn't have his. So one more for the bazillionth time, I'm going to suggest to you strongly, maybe two bazillionth time, if you're awake and you're dressed, especially if you're out of your home, even when you're in your home, but especially when you're out of your home, you should be carrying. If you're in a place where you're not allowed to carry, you have two choices. Move or carry very discreetly and take your chance and hope you don't have to use it and take your chances. But not carrying, especially nowadays, is not an option. I should have, instead of naming my book Dying is Not an Option, I should have put Not Carrying is Not an Option. There's you may have to put a little money in to see people. People spend money, they're all the time, they're perfectly justified, or no, let me rephrase that, they feel that they're justified, they justify it in their mind, that it's okay to take trips and go somewhere, it's okay to buy accessories for something, it's okay to, but they won't buy an additional used handgun for a couple of $100 to fill a gap that they have, you know, like, If the only gun you own is a Glock 17 or a 1911, that may not be the best thing to carry concealed when you're wearing shorts and a t-shirt. So in those cases, maybe you have to compromise a little bit and get a little 2-inch revolver that is easy to make disappear. If it wasn't for the 5-shot capacity, I would carry one all the time because it just they're just a breeze to conceal, deep conceal, and fast to get to. Or a little flat, small little semi-automatic, a little like a Glock 42 or 43, something like that. 42 is a great little 380. Flat, easy. I mean, you can put one of those in the concealment pocket of your 5'11 shirt, or in a big shirt pocket, your pants pocket, or whatever, in one of those little concealment wallets in your back pocket. There is no reason not to go armed. You have choices. You have lots and lots of choices. I would say, like I said, there's a limit to everything. I would not choose under any circumstances. Or in 99.97% of the time, I would not choose a little 2-shot Derringer, a little or even a little 5-shot 22, the little North American Arms things. I would not choose that under any circumstances. Yakima Glock's got a good point. He says there's no place I'm not allowed to carry. You know, I agree with that. I agree with it 100%. However, there are places where you may go to jail for a very, very long time. So you either need to stay out of those places or be exceedingly discreet and hope to hell you don't have to shoot anybody with it so that you don't go to jail for a long time. But I just saw Doc's comment here. It said, in the summer down here, it's way too hot to have a covering garment. Yeah, I agree. Carry pocket pistols during the summer, either a 9mm or a 357 snubby. Yeah, I'm not a fan of 357 snubbies. They're just too violent. But I like a little 38, like 38 plus P's in a little 2-inch gun. But whatever it is, I don't care what it is. Get something and figure out how you're going to carry it. Figure out how you're going to carry it discreetly. Keep your mouth shut. Don't tell your coworkers. Don't tell anybody that you come across. If you're in a place where you're not supposed to be carrying, keep your mouth shut. Don't let them see it. Learn how to be discreet. Learn how to carry that as if you were carrying it into Stalag 13 or somewhere. Of course, you could probably get in there without it, but you get my point, right?
just be discreet. Like, if you get caught, you're going to go to jail for the rest of your life. If you get caught, you're going to be killed. Carry that gun like the very last possible thing in the whole world you would want is for somebody to figure out that you have it. Whatever it takes. Learn how to, one of the things that you have to deal with when you get around people that you haven't seen for a while, especially at church, you haven't seen them for a whole week, and they want to hug you. So be prepared for that. And angle yourself at the moment that you turn for the hug and make sure that your gun is not discovered when you are pressed up against somebody for whatever reason. Now, if it's a good inside the pants holster, usually the only way they're going to feel it is for them to put their arm around your waist or something, you know, touch the small of your back as you walk up to them or whatever, and they may feel it. But otherwise, that's not really felt as you hug somebody, unless they. So it's a great thing about carrying either appendix carry. I'm not a big fan of appendix carry, but I do carry my little 2-inch revolver appendix style, or carrying it at 4 o'clock on your firing side hip, because it's so easy to protect it. You know, drop your elbow down there and cover it up real quick if somebody is approaching you to hug you or whatever. So that's a way you can protect that gun. Now, Doc just put on there, Nan asked about real small guns. And Doc put on their 38 Special Bodyguard. For someone like Nan, I think that's probably a good choice. Nan's got good upper body strength, and she's in good shape. But a 2-inch revolver, even in a 38, is a little bit spicy for some. You know, your axis of recoil is almost 3 times as high as some of the smaller revolvers. So, but barring that, yeah, I think it's a great idea. Like I said a while ago, the revolver is so easy to hide. The downsides is if you're really good and everything is placed properly, if you're really good, you might be able to reload that in 2.5 or 3 seconds, where the semi-automatic you can do in 1 or 1.5 seconds. So that's a little bit of a concern. Ordinarily, 1, 2, 3 shots probably take care of everything. But we've talked about numerous stories on this show where it's taken a lot more than that. So with a 5-shot capacity on these little revolvers, that's a little bit of a liability. If you can reload quickly, that helps to alleviate that a little bit. The other thing, the capacity of the gun to start with is 5 rounds, and then the reloading is, you know, 2.5, 3 seconds. So, but as far as concealment goes, or for a backup gun, a little 2-inch revolver is the catch me out. Now, some of these little revolvers are also, you know, made out of titanium or aluminum or something like that. And the thing is that while it feels light and it's comfortable to carry, you may get over that comfort about the time you touch that thing off, especially if you're shooting plus P ammunition in it. You may very well be in for quite a surprise there. Now, there is some truth to, there's a lot of truth to, you know, you may not feel the recoil under that kind of stress and all that. I agree with that. That doesn't change the fact that it pulls you. The follow-up shots are not as fast because it pulls you way off your target under recoil, and you have to bring it back, reacquire your target, and fire again. For most men, that's not a problem. For a very few women, that's not a problem. But for a whole bunch of people, there's a little bit of concern there for recoil. So you have to make up your own mind and do what is best for you. And I'll tell you one thing, all that aside that I just said, that revolver is a whole lot better than nothing. A whole lot better. And at sometimes when I'm under, you know, very deep concealment in some place where I'm not supposed to be carrying, it is my gun of choice. I much prefer a Glock 19 or Glock 23 or, you know, 27, 26, something like that. But sometimes I need, you know, cutoffs in a t-shirt, I'm going with a 2-inch revolver. And speed strips. Speed loaders are faster, but they're bulkier and hard to carry and hard to conceal. So speed strips is the way to do it. It costs me a little extra time, but I think it's the way to go. Doc, that's you know, the 357 Stubby, man, with full house 357s, that is an exciting gun to shoot, to put it nicely. Can I handle it? Yes, I can. I've got a lot of experience shooting. I'm 6'4", 250 pounds. I can handle a 2-inch Stubby. But between the recoil and reacquiring your target and the muzzle flash, I mean, the flash of that thing is about the size of a Volkswagen when it comes out of the end of that barrel. And the noise. The noise is indescribable. You've probably heard me use that term talking about this same subject before. The noise from a 2-inch or an inch and a half, 2-inch, 2.5-inch 357 Magnum is indescribable without hearing protection. And permanent damage is a surety. Permanent damage with any firearm is guaranteed, just some a lot worse than others. And the 2-inch 357 is akin to the 12-inch AR-15. It's just, it's violent, it's loud. The muzzle flash, the muzzle blast, the whole thing that goes along with the recoil, all the stuff we previously talked about here. That's why I'm just not a fan of that unless I really need to. Hey, Yakima Glock, that's a good idea. I've never thought about that. That's a great idea. Yakima Glock says an SKS stripper clip will fit 38 and 357 rounds as an alternative to speed strips. Now, I would say that there's nothing after the first one comes out of there, there's nothing to hold the rest of them in place, and they'd kind of slide around, but that's still a good idea. That's a good thing to keep, you know, a few extras in a shirt pocket or something and keep them together. I'm going to have to check that out, Yakima Glock. I like that idea. You could probably put a little bit of silicone or something in the bottom of that to keep those rounds from readily sliding out, you know, from one end to the other, you know, sliding around so much. But I'll bet you I can figure it out. And man, I carried, you tell your job is very physical, walking, bending over, and all that. Okay, I get that. But carried properly, when I say properly, and properly in my opinion, if you carry that appendix carry, I've climbed ladders. I told you all the story about the guy I chased in Atlanta for an hour and a half in underground Atlanta. And carrying a gun like that. I worked on construction jobs. I climbed, drove tractors, sat down, you know, run and play with all the kids and done, you know, everything everybody else did. And that gun is not uncomfortable. A semi-automatic in the same place is uncomfortable because they're not built the same. It's hard to describe on the radio, but, and I think Doc would probably agree if you take that revolver and stick it in their appendix carry on your firing side. The cylinder, for the most part, depending on the width of your belt, is mostly under the belt. The grip is over the belt. And if you put it right in that little groove where your leg is attached or your groin comes up there to your hip bone, that little groove where your leg bends when you sit down, that gun pretty well disappears It's not uncomfortable. I have sat for hours through meetings and stuff, you know, movies or whatever, and never had any problem with that gun. And like I said, I have run and climbed ladders and run upstairs, you know, chasing that guy and everything else. I never lost it, never moved, never was uncomfortable, and it was always, you know, right where I left it. So, and that's your mileage may vary depending on how you're built and you know, what kind of gun you get and all that. But, and Tebow, you've got a point there. The revolvers are bulkier than you like to carry concealed. I guess it depends on the revolver and how you're built, but if I showed you how I carry that 2-inch revolver, it's really not. It is less awkward, it is more comfortable than carrying a semi-automatic in the same place. Now, I would rather carry the semi-auto in a hip holster or an inside the pants holster on my hip, is what I'm used to. But like I said, the only time I carry the revolver is when I am really in need of deep concealment.
This is a copy of what the first Bible printed in English in America looked like. This Bible was printed by the U.S. Congress in 1782. In the records, it says that this Bible was, quote, a neat edition of the Holy Scriptures for the use of our schools, end quote. So the first Bible printed in America in English was printed by Congress for the use of our schools. It's worse than that. In the front of the cover, it says that Congress resolved, the United States and Congress assembled recommend this edition of the Bible to the inhabitants of the United States. So the first Bible printed in English in America was done by the guys who signed the documents, endorsed by Congress, and done for the use of schools. And we're going to be told that they don't want any kind of religion and education. They don't want voluntary prayer. No, it doesn't make sense. This document by itself is fairly significant. But in 1830, Congress commissioned these four paintings over here to recapture what the official record said was the Christian history of the United States. So in these four paintings, you have really a span of several hundred years. If I take you through them chronologically, the first is back there, Columbus, landing in the Western world in 1492. They got out, they knelt down, they had a prayer service. You see the cross they have. They named the land where they had landed San Salvador, meaning Holy Savior, which tells you something of the thinking that was going on then. You come back over my shoulder here. This is the baptism of Pocahontas in Jamestown, and this was in 1613. Over here, the fourth painting is 1620. This is the embarkation of the pilgrims coming to America. You see them gathered around the Bible there. You see the prayer meeting they're having. Now, if you just take those four paintings right there, those four paintings in this great secular hall of government, those four paintings represent two prayer meetings, a Bible study, and a baptism, which is not bad for a secular building. As a matter of fact, you're standing in what in 1857 was the largest church in the United States, is the U.S. Capitol. Back on December the 4th of 1800, members of Congress, members of the Senate, Thomas Jefferson was over the Senate, you had John Trumbull over the House. They decided that on Sundays we would turn the Capitol building into a church building. And starting on Sunday, we started having services in the Capitol. Now, 6 weeks after that, Thomas Jefferson became president of the United States. But for his 8 years as president, he went to church here at the U.S. Capitol, listened to the sermons here at the Capitol, and being commander-in-chief, he decided he could help the worship here at the Capitol. He ordered the Marine Corps band to come play the worship services at the Capitol. Now, that'd be kind of cool having the Marine Corps band as your worship band, you know, in church. That church went for the better part of a century, and by 1857, there were 2,000 people a week that went to church in the hall of the House of Representatives. In addition to that, there were four other churches that met at the Capitol. First Congregational, this was their church home, as was First Presbyterian, as was Capitol Hill Presbyterian. Churches met here. There was nothing secular or seen to be secular about this building until the last 30, 40, 50 years.
I'm revived. I feel different. I feel that I'll go home and know how to pray. Last night we walked around the Capitol. I spent more time crying and weeping listening to Brother David as he spoke about our government and the documents that he held up. And I said, Lord, I said, how can I be used?
The David Barton tour of the Capitol, that was awesome. It was enlightening. It was awesome. There was so much that I didn't know.
It opened up our eyes where the media will only give you one side, but we got to see what America was built on. And even though we knew it, we got to see in depth. And just the information that he gave us, just it blew my mind.
Though I've lived in the general area for over 20 years now, I'd never been inside the Capitol before. I'm within 2.5 hours of the Capitol. And David, the leader, was just phenomenal. So
one of the highlights for me was going to the Capitol building and getting some history about what's been going on as far as how this nation was started. And we've been lied to, and that's the honest to God truth. And just not and knowing that, has really, I'm a little angry about it, and I'm at a point of getting the education that I need.
You see the statue to the left of the door over there, that white marble statue? That is President James A. Garfield. President Garfield was one of the young major generals in the Civil War. He was a war hero. He became Speaker of the House. He became the 20th President of the United States. And by the way, that man founded Howard University. General O.O. Howard took it over after he founded it. Just a really cool guy. But what we never hear about that President of the United States is that he was a minister during the Second Great Awakening. This is actually one of his letters signed James A. Garfield, 1858. In this letter, President Garfield recounts that he had just finished preaching a revival service where that he preached the gospel 19 times in the revival. He says, as a result of his preaching, he said that 34 folks came to Christ and he baptized 31 of them. Now, that doesn't seem like a typical presidential activity today. That's what we used to do with presidents in the past. Again, you'd walk through, you'd see that statue, you'd think, oh, there's a president. You'd never think there's a minister. We've so compartmentalized Christianity in such a small box that we don't realize our military leaders, our ministers, our educators, our presidents used to be ministers. That's why I say about 1/4 of these statues are ministers of the gospel.
The church has been silent. It's been a real eye-opener to see, the forefathers of our faith in this country, how they engaged the culture. They had a positive impact on the culture, and really we're all the beneficiaries of that generations later.
Now, if you come back to these guys right here, these 56 guys right here are the ones that create all the problem with religious expression public today. You see, every time we go into a public setting on a court case, and what's happened is we've all been trained to recognize the two least religious founding fathers. We can all find Jefferson and Franklin, and everybody else was just like them. Really? I mean, most people have no clue that Jefferson started church in the U.S. Capitol, that it went for a century. Most people have no clue that Thomas Jefferson in 1803 negotiated a treaty with the Kaskaskia Indians in which Jefferson put federal funds to pay for missionaries to go evangelize the Indians and gave federal funds so that after they were converted, we'd build them churches in which to worship. And that's our least religious founding father, okay, which tells you something about the others. Out of the 56 guys who signed the Declaration, you have 29 who held seminary or Bible school degrees.
My first visit to FRC was that of going through the Capitol tour with David Barton. And that changed my life because in that tour, we learned and found out things about this nation and the founding of this nation that are holy and strictly Christian from the Bible. And you need to know that. You need to hear about that. So I encourage you, make FRC a destination. The Family Research Council has given us pastors a voice that goes way beyond our pulpits.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network.
That ain't country. That ain't country.
Yeah, we're country.
Okay.
Okay, that was a little bit late for the break, by golly. I wasn't even paying attention to the time. I just hit it and looked down there and said, well, what's the point now? It's already this late. But anyway, thought I'd throw it out there anyway. We've been blabbing so much about guns and everything, I've kind of missed the rest of our stories here. But that's okay. I think it's an important topic because right now with the looking at the red flag laws and stuff, in some degree, I think people are making a little bit bigger deal out of this red flag law than it really is. Because almost all 50 states, I think all 50 states already have red flag laws of some fashion. What we do not have is federal red flag laws, which could be a lot worse. I don't know. The Lautenberg Act from 1998 or 9 or whenever it was, in itself is basically a red flag law, and that is a federal law. The Lautenberg Act is one that says if you have been convicted, it gives you a little bit of leeway if you have been convicted, even accused in some cases, of domestic violence, they take your guns away. And like I said, I've told you before, I knew a guy in Cody, Wyoming that had his guns taken away because he snatched the telephone out of his girl's hand, his girlfriend's hand. He didn't touch her. He didn't hurt her. He didn't knock her down. He just grabbed a phone. She felt threatened, and he lost his gun rights. So that is that's basically a red flag law. But concerning stuff like that, that happens in all 50 states. And there are some states that have since then, like Colorado, Washington, some other states, there's probably half a dozen, maybe 10, that have already adopted red flag laws. The only thing that we're looking at right now that's any different is these are going to be federal red flag laws. Does that make it any worse or any better? Well, it's yet to be seen. It depends on how it's worded. We talked about that the other night. So we'll find out before too long. But back to my point that I started there, this is a time when we've talked about burying guns before. Basically, the consensus is if it's time to bury them, it's time to use them. To some degree, I agree with that. But if you have everything out and they come in at 4 o'clock in the morning and kick your door down, they're going to take your guns, all of them. So why not have something put away just in case house catches on fire or whatever, why let them all be destroyed? You should have something to fall back on, whether it's buried or, put somewhere else safe and secure and where it won't get wet or rust or be discovered by someone that's got no business with it or something like that. Tebow says Florida has a real tough red flag law, I guess, now. So that's another. So they're looking, they're grabbing everything they can possibly get to take these guns away from us. If they enact this law, the worst danger that I see in this is that, now don't get me wrong, I am vehemently opposed to these red flag laws, completely, 100%. But we've been living with them for years. People just don't know about it. The only problem I see, biggest problem I see with new ones coming up, is that depending on how it's worded, people are going to use those for the sole purpose of disarming the gun owners, not because they're scared, not for anybody's safety, not for any, but for political reasons to disarm gun owners. So Yakima Glock's right, a little cash never hurt anyone. That's right. A little cash, get it? In the ground, in the attic, and somewhere. A little cash of guns, ammo, and a few accessories and whatnot. put a few of them away. As I said earlier, people always manage to find a little bit of money to go on some stupid trip somewhere. Or to, and that's fine if you've got your preparedness things taken away. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't travel. I'm saying if you're spending money on stuff like that and you don't have your preparedness stuff put away, your priorities are not in the right place. Because this is the time. This is the time that we've all been preparing for and hoping that would never come. Well, it's coming, and it's here. Now, every one of you knows that I belong to the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm a Mormon. We believe strongly, wholeheartedly, and completely in the what you call it, the what the elders of the church says. Not the word I was looking for here. But you can call it prophecies, but that's not the word I'm looking for. But anyway, when I was 11 years old, in 1967, during the priesthood conference in October 1967, Elder Brown said, "Some of you young men will witness the final testing time." And I don't know exactly what age he was talking about, but I was 11 years old. I was a young man. And I am convinced that this will happen in my lifetime. It's not just that. There's many things that have been said by more people than the people in my church. You know, people and things in the Bible, predictions by people that study this stuff. You know, look at James Wesley Rawls and some of those people like that who have spent their entire life analyzing the way things are happening here and predicting what to expect and putting their entire life savings and their life in general behind what they believe. I mean, what they have behind the idea that something is going to happen in our lifetime. And I think that I don't know how much of a genius you have to be to look right now and say, this. I think I said it last week that I do believe that before the end of this year. See, we're seeing how many shoot. There was another shooting today. There was another one. Let's see, 6 wounded. This was yesterday. 6 wounded after shooter opens fire on a large crowd in East Garfield Park. And let's see. Yeah, that's sick. Let's look here. Let me find another one. That was. This is something that happened. Remember the. Some of you may not have seen this, but there's a movie coming out called The Hunt, where they have. It's about. What the Antifa and the liberals hunting deplorables, hunting Trump supporters. Now, I hear that it's been canceled, that it's not coming out, but the fact is it was being made and there was a trailer out for it, and they were this was the real deal. If that's the kind of attitude, mindset that these people have, we've got problems here. The one I wanted to tell you here, there's a son saves a family of 6, took out a home invader with a headshot. Yeah, it's good for him. I'm not even going to get into talking about old Epstein, whatever the hell his name is. Where is my story from Chicago from this weekend? This last weekend as like yesterday. Here we go. Let me open this up so I can see the date and confirm what I just said. And it is August 12, 2019. At least, listen to what I'm saying here. You haven't heard any of this in mainstream news. At least 46 shot, that's people, At least 46 people shot, including an 8-year-old girl, in weekend violence across Chicago. Nobody's saying anything about that, but they're raising hell over 3 or 4 people being shot in a park somewhere. But this happens every weekend in Chicago, every single weekend. And you never hear anything about it. You know, the local, you listen to WGN, you pick up WGN TV or radio out of Chicago, and you'll hear it on there. But I don't know if this article shows how many have been shot so far this year, but it seems like it was like 1,800 or something, some ridiculous number shot just in Chicago just this year. So, yes, we are in that time. We are in the time that we have been preparing for years. There's a new anonymous posting there. Anonymous, whoever you are, I'm glad you made it in here. I hope you come back and join us again. He says red flag laws work both ways. Looks like you're typing a little fast. I can't read all that. Turned leftist acquaintances into using them before. Yeah, there you go. Now that I haven't thought about that. I think it says you turn your leftist acquaintances in. Talking about drugs and guns. In other words, swat them till the cops start to get sick of anonymous tips. You know, on the one hand, that lowers this to their level, which I detest. But on the other hand, you know, we are about to engage in a war, and we may have to resort to things that are less than favorable to us, things that we wouldn't normally do, and you know, that may turn into one of them. Thank you for joining us, Anonymous, whoever you are. Okay, well, it's about that time. Got wound up here talking about other stuff and didn't talk about half the stories I had planned to, but we'll save some for Wednesday night. And everything's going to run as normal here for a little while until I have a chance to talk to DeTinker, like I said, and figure out what a new schedule is going to be, or if it's going to change at all. I don't know. But we are looking to back it up an hour and start at 8 o'clock Arizona time, Mountain Standard time, throughout the year. So we'll let you know when that happens. So I'm going to scoot on out of here now, and we'll see you guys Wednesday afternoon. And I appreciate you joining me.
Well, that wraps up another edition of the Shooting Bench. Join me Monday and Wednesday from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, and again on Fridays from 7 to 10 for the Shooting Bench. Good night, and thanks for joining me.
No reconciliation. No, let's talk it over. Number I can call. Goodbye says it all.